I want to take the next 2 weeks in Baptist history and tell the story of Solomon Ginsberg. And Solomon Ginsberg was born on August 6, 1867. He was born in in Poland, but Russian-controlled Poland. And this was a very strict Jewish Orthodox area. And when he was 15 years old, his father's matrimonial agent had his father was a rabbi. His father's matrimonial agent had arranged his marriage to a 12-year-old daughter of a wealthy Jewish family. And Solomon had spent some of his life in his early years with his grandfather in Germany. And because of that exposure, he really was beginning to rebel against this really strict Jewish orthodoxy. And it really repulsed him that he was being this marriage was being arranged that he would have to marry this 12-year-old girl. So he ran away, and he kind of wandered for a while in as a 15-year-old in Poland and Russia. He eventually made his way to London in a boat that was carrying some horses, and he found there. I'm not really sure how he did this, but he found there an uncle. Who took him in and actually gave him employment. And it was in London that he heard the gospel for the first time when a converted Jew invited him to hear him preach from Isaiah 53. This really brought conviction after that sermon, and he struggled for the next 3 months. He got a hold of a New Testament, and he read that New Testament. Struggled for, as I said, 3 months in really deep conviction. He read the words, "His blood be upon us and our children." And he said, "It seemed to me that I had taken an active part in the murder of the innocent one. And I realized for the first time the reason for the terrible history of the Jews, the suffering and persecutions they had gone through and even still were enduring." And so he went to Welco Square Mission. He heard another man preach, a pastor, John Wilkerson. He preached on the text, "He that loveth father or mother more than me is not worthy of me," in Matthew 10. And that night, after pacing the floor of his room all night, he surrendered his all to Jesus, and he was saved that night in his room. Of course, when his uncle found out, he was expelled from the home. He was fired from his job. And he was excommunicated from the family and disinherited from all that he would have been had inheritance. He said as he heard the curses of the excommunication pronounced upon him, he said it was a terrible experience, horrible experience. But he was comforted in the text that kept going through his mind that Christ hath redeemed us from the curse of the law, being made a curse for us. That verse found in Galatians chapter 3. And that verse comforted him literally as he was being going through this formal excommunication from his uncle's family. Well, he's saved now, and the Lord is calling him to preach. And he applies at Spurgeon School there in London, but it was full to capacity. So he took his training at the school called Regions Beyond Mission College. And there was a lady, a widow, of the man who had started that college. Her name was Miss Callie, Mrs. Callie. And she offered to pay the passage, the ship fare. She offered to pay 100 pounds sterling, and then give enough things and to get this person through. If somebody would volunteer and learn the language and worked for a year as a self-supporting missionary. Well, Ginsberg accepted that offer, and soon he was on his way to Portugal, where he arrived in February of 1890, and he began to study the Portuguese language. He said he gave himself to learn at least 100 words a day. Soon he'd written a tract, and you'll see what happens here, but I don't know the Portuguese title, but the English title is "St. Peter Was Never a Pope." So if you can imagine this young boy writing this tract, that really got him a lot of attention, really a lot of hatred. He wrote a stronger one entitled "The Religion of Rags, Bones, and Flour." And because of this, the Jesuit priests, they really were conspiring to imprison him, and he had to flee. He left Portugal and he arrived in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil on June 10th, 1890. He said a blessing later that he had been exposed to Roman Catholicism in Portugal as he began his mission, his missionary life there in Brazil. Well, he began holding, he didn't really know what to do, so he began holding open-air meetings, and he got a job in the community working as a porter, and that's how he made money. And really his contact with the people in that job helped him with the language. There was a new constitution actually in Brazil at that time, which maybe it was a temporary constitution, but it had guaranteed to all faiths and creeds and separation of church from the state. And so as he read his New Testament, he realized that he thought that the New Testament example was to evangelize and to stay in a place until a church was organized. So this also was impressed upon him as he would go door to door, and behind him the priests would come door to door confiscating the books and the tracts that he was giving out. So he realized, I need to minister to these people, see people saved, and start a church. When he got to Brazil, he had been encouraged by the Congregationalists that he came from to attack the Baptists because they were seen almost as the enemy, even by the Congregationalists. But instead, as he got to Brazil, he began to study his Bible and study baptism. And he was also told, he was convinced when he was back in England, that not to get into discussion about baptism because it just wasn't helpful and it wouldn't develop the ministry there. But he began to read his Bible, and he said later, he said, after a close and serious study of the subject, he knew that the Baptists based their arguments on the Bible, and the Bible was the best book to decide this question. Being persuaded of believers' baptism and other Baptist distinctives, he cast his lot in with the Baptists, and he even determined to go back and rebaptize those he had previously sprinkled. And, of course, this brought about great debate and hatred from the Congregationalists, which, again, he had come from a Congregationalist background from London. The Baptists formed their first church there in October 1882, and that was the first church that Ginsburg established in Brazil. Well, we're going to take 2 weeks to tell this story, but just giving kind of an overview this morning. But he began same thing. He would go to a different area. He would start an open-air meeting and distribute literature and preach publicly and begin planting churches throughout Brazil. He would also disciple the young men and prepare them for the ministry. And this didn't come easy, as I'm going to tell you some of the stories, as the persecution that would follow. He was in constant threat, under constant threat of assassination. One event, he had to flee for his life with bullets flying over his shoulder. One occasion, the police chief said to him, you are prohibitive to preach your doctrines in this whole country. And his response was, I am very sorry not to be able to accommodate you in this particular case. You see, I'm a Baptist, and we Baptists do not accept orders in matters of religion from any civil authority, neither from you nor the governor of the state or even from the president of the republic. We have orders from one who is superior to you all. And then he was really questioned as who in the world would be superior to the president of Brazil. And with that, he read them the Great Commission in Matthew 28. But I wanted to relay just one story quickly, and next week we'll tell some more. But one time he had been up in the Amazon in the northern part, and he was coming back from the Amazon, and he began a series of open-air services in Nazareth. The local priest heard he was coming. His reputation was so great that the local priest heard he was coming, and actually the local priest hired a bandit to assassinate him there when he was preaching. He actually made sure that it was the week that the mayor and the judge and the police, I guess they were all out of town, or he got them to leave town, so there was nobody to appeal to. And so the plot did become known to Ginsburg, and he was urged not to hold the meeting. He said, though, I prefer dying to running away. I'm ready to shed my blood for the dear one who shed his blood for me. And so he preached for an hour, and expecting every minute for something desperate to happen, nothing happened for that first hour. So he called for a song, and then he began to preach again. And this time, he boldly attacked the Church of Rome, and he exposed the confessional, the immorality of the priests, and the evils associated with the doctrine of purgatory, and still nothing happened. So he closed the meeting. He said he was kind of disappointed, for he knew that persecution had always aided his cause, and he was kind of disappointed that nothing happened. 2 months goes by, and... The the hired assassin who was saved, and with tears flowing down his cheeks, he confessed to the believers that what had happened. He said on that day, he had been hired by the priest. He had his gun. He was ready to kill Ginsburg in the middle of that service. He was sitting there in the service, but before he came to service, he said he drank some liquor to stimulate his courage. He came to the meeting again, both, as I said, both armed and nerved for his bloody assignment. However, as Ginsburg preached, the liquor overpowered him, and he fell asleep. And Ginsburg said, "Here's one good job that alcohol accomplished. It saved my life." So just real threats. And as I read his biography and learned more about him, just an amazing man. And, you know, many times we think about these stories and maybe look at these men as almost superhuman. And yet these men lived very real lives. They had families. They had churches that were very important to them. And it's interesting to read in his own words what was going through his mind and how God used these events in his life. So next week we'll finish his story and I'll tell you a few more exciting events from his life. But I want to tell you the story of Solomon Ginsburg and a missionary to Brazil.